Hello, my name is Fiona Bond, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU FM. This program is a collaboration between KWBU and Creative Waco, where we sit down with creative leaders and innovators from our community and talk about their work. I'm the Executive Director of Creative Waco, which is a nonprofit that supports the arts across McLennan County through strategy, funding, and professional development. Today, we're wrapping up the year by talking to composer Carlos Colon and forensic archaeologist Dr. Laurie Baker. That might seem like a surprising combination in a program about the arts, but I hope it will open up an interesting conversation about how the arts offer a toolkit that is beneficial to any human endeavor. At Creative Waco, we often talk about how the arts improve our quality of life, add to the economy, make us happier, and make our environment more appealing. And those things are definitely important. But my two guests today have engaged in a creative collaboration that I think shows that the arts can also give us a fresh language for exploring complex issues and facing sometimes painful reality by finding points of connection and humanity instead of the points of division we're so used to hearing. Plus, you both have really compelling stories to tell, and this is NPR, so we're all about interesting stories. Carlos and Laurie, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Carlos, I'd like to start with you. Carlos is Assistant Director of Chapel at Baylor University here in Waco. He's a musician, composer, liturgist, and cultural promoter, specializing in music that's academically serious but also ecclesiastically valuable. His recent projects lie at the intersection of social justice and religious change. He was born in El Salvador and at the age of 14 was forced to flee his home and took refuge in Guatemala City before coming to the U.S. in 1986. He holds a Bachelor of Music from Belmont University, a Master's of Music from Baylor University, and became a U.S. citizen in 2001. His international heritage and personal experience of civil war inform his compositions and their calls to justice, peace, and beauty. His music has been performed across the world. And in October of this year, his newest composition, Te Deum Latinoamericano, was presented as part of the celebrations for the canonization of slain Archbishop Oscar Romero at the main cathedrals and cities of El Salvador to more than 75,000 attendees. Carlos, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here this morning.
Carlos, I'd like to ask you to start by telling us a little bit about how a young boy fleeing civil war in El Salvador ended up being a composer of music in Waco, Texas. Tell us something of your story.
Well, that's a very long journey, but in a nutshell. So indeed, I left when I was 14 and I moved to Guatemala City, where I would say members of a community of a Baptist church protected me literally for 5 years. And I like to say, sometimes when I speak to my family about those times, I said, you know, those were probably the some of the most difficult years of my life, but they were also the best, you know, in regards to receiving a lot of love and just really coming to terms that there is pain in this world, but there is also good people out there. There is also much love to celebrate. And from there, one day, and this is a short while ride, but one day I was playing the piano and conducting a choir in a little Baptist church, and some American volunteers came to the church. And after the end of the service, one member of that team, as a short-term missions team, said to me, I would like to help you go and study in the U.S. And so I came to Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee, and I did my bachelor's of music there. It seemed there that everybody was, all of my professors were Baylor graduates, or a lot of them were. So it was, they were loving for years that I should go to Baylor, you know, and indeed I came here in the early 90s, studied piano and composition, and worked as a church musician after that for several years, and then I came back about 16 years ago to Waco, started doing projects at Baylor. Fiona, you and I had some connections at ISR at the time, yeah. And some projects, and then I have been at this position about 6 years, yes.
Wonderful. Say a little bit more. I mean, you've already hinted at this, but what role did music play in what was a very traumatic time in your childhood and your early adolescence?
Yes, very early on, when I found my first Baptist community in El Salvador at age 12. So this is before I left for Guatemala. I was just deeply moved by the singing and choral singing. Even in our little village, we had a pastor who just valued music, for its beauty, but of course also for its possibilities to lead us to prayer. So very early on, and I didn't see the piano until I never saw or heard a piano, anybody playing the piano live, until I went to that community at age 12. During those years in Guatemala, I had a wonderful piano teacher and wonderful choral directors who ministered and mentored me. And I think that was to me a lifeline of sorts, which allowed me to, in a sense, not technically escape the world and the realities of war, of separation from family, etc. I was living, but also maybe better said, dwell in this world better, because music and the arts were there, present.
That's profound. Thank you. What was it like going back to your homeland to hear the music that you had written performed in front of over 75,000 people?
It was a very emotional experience for many reasons. The celebration of Archbishop Romero, whom I remember very clearly the night. I was walking in the street, and I remember very clearly the night when he was killed. Mm-hmm. And I remember that was almost apocalyptic for us. You know, if this can happen to him, nobody's safe. And then fast forwarding after that awful war, and many friends who were killed, many people that I knew that were killed, and just fast forwarding and being now on the other end, where Romero's witness, Romero's life. San Romero de las Americas, we call him. We share him with all the continent. And so just being back where he's now in a celebration, it was very surreal. We have this was a celebration. You know, I have written a requiem, which is a mass for the dead, but the proper response for a saint is thanksgiving. And so that's what we were saying Te Deum masses all over the country. And it was a celebration to music in the plaza, foods, it's like the whole body. And I think this is going to lead to a conversation later, our bodies just in souls presence theirs, we with all the arts, high arts or the folklore or the people. And so it was really an amazing experience of fast forwarding. On the art, after the war, we had lost a lot of our talent. Mm-hmm. A lot of people fled the country or were expelled, were exiled. And this is the first time that I felt that we really have recovered. And I was working with a choir from El Paso that came to help us. But we had a choir also on the ground from a Catholic college. And they were just absolutely fantastic, apart any college choir here in the U.S. And we noticed the level of play, and it was just beautiful. We didn't have a government-sanctioned group or help. It was all volunteer and private. And I really felt for the first time that ruins of sorts, that in shambles that was the arts after the war, is now a distant memory, as it is the pain of losing Romero now that he is with us in the eternal communion of the saints.
What an amazing experience. Well, I'd like to turn to my second guest today, Dr. Laurie Baker. She's Associate Professor of Anthropology and Vice Provost of Strategic Initiatives, Collaboration and Leadership Development at Baylor University. She holds a PhD from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, in anthropology and specializes in the molecular and forensic analysis of skeletal remains. She's founding executive director of Reuniting Families, which is a program that aids in the recovery, identification, and repatriation of undocumented immigrants who perished during the migration into the United States on the border. She's acted as a consultant to the Attorney General of the Mexican state of Chihuahua, the Washington Office on Latin America, the U.S. Agency for International Development, and Truth Commissions in Peru and Panama. She's been an invited speaker in many national and international venues, such as the Peace Palace in The Hague, as part of the International Commission on Missing Persons Conference and Amnesty International. She was a finalist for Texan of the Year in 2014, and her work has been featured by National Geographic, Scientific American, Discover Magazine, The Washington Post, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, NPR, BBC, all of the big media outlets. And Laurie, we're so lucky to have you and Carlos in Waco. It always amazes me we have people doing internationally significant work here. Tell us a little bit about how you ended up in Waco. I'm guessing it's not quite as dramatic as Carlos's story.
No, it's not at all as dramatic as Carlos's story, but it's interesting for Christians as we're constantly asking God to bring to light our vocation and what we should be doing. And as I was just a little scientist in a lab doing genetics work, mostly on ancient DNA samples, some forensic research. I had no interest at all in forensic science, mostly because when you work in forensic science, there's never a positive day. There's never a day when something good happens. There's only days when something tragic has occurred. And I had a number of very close friends who worked around the world, and at the time were working in places like Bosnia-Herzegovina, in Latin America, really investigating horrible atrocities that were taking place and genocide. There weren't a lot of people back in the day, I'm quite old now, that could do bone DNA analysis. So I was being asked to come and do things such as training of prosecutors that would be working in truth and reconciliation issues in home countries. And so I was in Peru with a group of international scientists, and I was the only American. And one night we're going around the room talking about what we're working on when we're not in Peru helping with the beginning this process. And every single person was working on something that had such incredible need and impact on people's lives and were heartbreaking stories. One was a friend of mine who's with the Guatemalan forensic anthropology team, Leonel Paz, and he was working on a mass grave of children. And there were about 34 children, all under the ages of three, and there wasn't a single bullet found in the grave because these were Maya children, and they weren't worthy of bullets. And they were massacred by people who lived in the same community as their families. And it was horrible, and of course we're all crying. And then they got to me, and the group said, well, it must be nice to be from America because you don't have any of these issues. You don't have these types of atrocities. And I said, no, not in the same way, but we do have these individuals that are dying on our borders because they're fleeing violence, they're fleeing extreme poverty, and they're looking for refuge in the U.S. And they're crossing in areas that are very poor, without a lot of resources, and without any expertise to do anything to help identify who these individuals are. And so their families don't get answers. And it was at that moment that I thought, I have to come back and do something significant. And everyone there, although they're all from circumstances that aren't as affluent as ours, volunteered to come to the U.S. to help with this horrible thing that was happening. Uh-huh. And so I came back and told my husband, babe, we need to move to the border region somewhere because I'm being called to do this work. And my husband was a scientist at the National Lab, and he's like, okay. And kind of paused. He goes, how? Like, I have no idea. And I got a call from Baylor, you know, not more than a week after, saying, are you interested in coming and being part of our forensic science program? And we came to explore it. It was very different than the world we were living in. And we had an administrative interview with our provost and with the dean and the senior vice provost. And I said, okay, well, I really want to come to Texas to do this, and I want to come to Baylor for two reasons. One, it's a private university, so I can protect the identity of the individuals I'm trying to help. Mm. And two, it's a Christian university, and I'm motivated to do this by my faith. And couldn't believe that they were excited about it and thought it was a wonderful thing that we should do. Certainly not something that most universities would have supported, especially at the time.
That's remarkable. Well, by now you have helped to identify hundreds, perhaps even thousands of remains, along with your student teams. Are there any stories in particular that stand out in this work?
You know, there are so many stories. I think there are two in particular, one where we had a resolution and one where we didn't. But the first identification that I made here, I felt like I was supposed to be doing this work, that God wanted me or wanted someone doing this work. And it was a woman who was my age at the time. And I'm wondering, what am I doing for these families? Do they want to know the answer, or would they rather imagine that this person that they love so dearly has a good life somewhere and is living and they just haven't heard from them? So she was 32. She had two daughters and had come to the U.S. because she wanted to give them a better life than she had. She wanted to have enough money to help educate, to buy them the things that they needed. And she was a single mom living with her mother in a home in the Yucatan with dirt floors, no running water, a very, very different existence. And she sprained her ankle with the group. She couldn't keep up, although people were trying to carry her for a long way, and they left her behind with the smuggler saying that he would go back and take care of her. Either he never went back or she had already perished before he got there. So when we made this identification, I knew that there was a mom who wasn't getting her daughter back, and I knew that there were two daughters that were never going to see their mom again. And their circumstances were so much worse than they were even before she left. And my worry was that I was giving them this news that they would have preferred not to know this. And so I asked her mother, and she said, no, now I have a place to go and pray. Now I have a place to be with my daughter. I can go and lay flowers on her grave. And every mother that I've spoken to since says the same thing. I wander around. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And so even though there's no such thing as closure in situations like this, there is a resolution and a peace with having that loved one there again and a place to go and be with them. And I think that's really what we seek to do, is to bring that to these families that, honestly, most of the families we work with don't have a voice during life, and we're trying to at least give them a voice after. And it strikes me when Carlos, this project that we worked on together was Carlos's idea, and I thought it was just beautiful. And the thought that Carlos, as a young boy, was a refugee, he could have been among the cases that we see in my laboratory. It breaks my heart to imagine the world losing people like Carlos that have so much to offer in beauty and love.
Well, that is a great point on which I'm looking forward to inviting you to talk about this collaboration. This is a reminder that you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco. I'm your host for today, Fiona Bond. A couple of years ago, Carlos and Laurie collaborated with filmmaker Pilar Timpane to create the film Lamento con Alas. The film documents the work that my guest, Dr. Laurie Baker, has been doing along with teams of forensic science students from Baylor University. They work with ranch director LaVoyga Durham to exhume, identify, and repatriate the remains of immigrants who've died crossing from Mexico to the United States, most of whom have been found after makeshift burials close to where they perished. The music that accompanies the film is composed by my other guest, Carlos Colon, whose own story mirrors that of some of the migrants and provides a very powerful dimension to the film. Carlos, tell us a little bit about how this project came about.
Well, I I had been observing the work of Lori for years, and at the same time, we all have been observing the development of this immigration crisis and the many layers of tragedy that accompany this crisis. And so, at one level, I wanted to do something about it, and I think that. I was moved by the way that Lori or Dr. Baker will and her students will go and take care a great sacrifice to them of finding these remains and trying to reunite them. And so we wanted to tell that story in the hopes that people watching this story, regardless of their political affiliations, could see and say these are equal human beings to you know as us, deserving of our protection, our help, our respect, and that was the primary motivation. Incidentally, we even before this conversation started, we were talking about the common friendships. I was mentioning this project to a friend at Dichotomy here in Waco, and our friend Dan Train is a Baylor graduate who now works at Duke, and he says, I know this woman, Pilar Timpain, who can help you, because he knew that we didn't just want to make a video about this, but we want to make an art film to remember, to honor these victims, and to highlight the work of Dr. Lori Baker on their behalf. So that's how this came about.
Lori, this is subject matter that was already very close to your heart. And the film, one of the things that really strikes me is just as Carlos was saying, it's very uncoupled from the politics that are usually associated with this conversation. But what we have instead is this amazing music that Carlos composed, which is almost a character within the film. What do you think his music brings to what is already this very sensitive subject matter for you?
Well, as Carlos said, not just making a video about what had happened, I'm always happy to tell people and to make them aware. I think most people have no idea the humanitarian crisis and the extent and exactly who this is affecting the most. And the idea in working with Carlos that he could bring some beauty to this horrible human tragedy was so appealing to me. And it's a gift that he's given to these families in creating this beautiful music so that as they're thinking about dealing with this horrible tragedy, they know that somebody loved their families enough to not just give them a voice, but to create something beautiful around something tragic that had happened. So most of the world that I live in isn't beautiful at all. And it's so wonderful, and I often listen to his music when I'm working in the lab to be reminded of the beauty of the love that people have for those that they've never met and never will meet.
And Carlos, how do you approach composing music for such a difficult subject matter?
Well, in my case, my music is grounded usually on religious, you know, hymns. Or in this case the score was featured mostly my Requiem, and so there is an ancient, you know, chant that gives birth to many Requiems that have been written, and so it's in a sense is a combination of creativity in a connection with a tradition. And so, and I wanted to do that because of the thought that when I was particularly on the field and, you know, at this ranch, Bocha, as we call it, La Voyager, you know, Bocha showed me a place where he had found a body, and it was a young man, and I imagine the sadness of him dying alone, the sadness of his body just laying there without anybody crying for him or praying for him or burying him, giving him a proper burial. So in a sense, this was an attempt to honor the dead, something that is deep in many cultures and something that unfortunately we're losing with modernity. And so that was kind of that's an answer as to the origins.
As we wrap up this conversation, it seems to me that this film, and we're going to make it available on the link that's associated with this program, but the film is dealing with very difficult subject matter, uncoupling it from politics, bringing a certain truth, but it's also full of hope. And as we turn towards the new year, you know, some people might find this a strange subject for a conversation at the holiday time of year. But it seems to me that fundamentally we're celebrating the survival of a family that also had to flee persecution in the story of Mary and Joseph fleeing with Jesus. And as we turn towards the new year, I would love to hear from each of you where you think hope lies in this.
Well, it's interesting and something we talk about in my classes. In particular, if you ask people who the most famous refugee is in the world, they often think of people like Gandhi. And very few remember that Jesus was born a refugee. His family was fleeing and seeking refuge and the circumstances under that. So as we go into the holiday season, I think it's really important for people, especially during Advent, as we're preparing our hearts, we're celebrating the coming of Jesus and then the second coming that will occur. We should think about how we're preparing ourselves to welcome in those that are under very different circumstances than our own, and loving and taking them in. And we have an opportunity to do that, and we should embrace that during the holidays especially.
I love that, Lori. And I think that because this problem is still with us, still without a solution, we're going to continue hoping, and we're going to continue supporting the Dr. Bakers of this world who want to see resolution and honor and help for those who are less fortunate than us.
Thank you so much to both of you for being here. Thank you to Dr. Lori Baker and Carlos Colon. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for a recap of this conversation and links to see the film we've just been talking about, Lamento con Alas, and find out more about Lori and Carlos's work. You can catch the next episode of Conversations with Creative Waco on Friday, January the 25th, where we'll be sharing more stories of leaders from Waco's artistic and cultural community. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU FM. I'm Fiona Bond. Happy holidays, and thanks again for tuning in.